if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
Technology can be key. How do I use technology to empower the child sex traffic victims? So I created this interface, and then I gave it away. So yeah, the county, the people that I was talking with, they couldn't say, well, we don't have any resources, because clearly I did in 24 hours with a bunch of ragtag hackers at a picnic table.
When most people think of social work, they don't necessarily think of technology. But for Ruby Gillen, the two are a natural combination to create positive change. Ruby, who is herself a former foster child, is an outstanding social worker in the Los Angeles area. Working in the field of social work since 1996, she's investigated more than 6,000 cases of child abuse, and she describes herself as a hacktivist. With a master's degree in social work and a baccalaureate in computer information systems, she's been using both areas of expertise to approach social problems more efficiently. Since 2015, Ruby has participated in, as she says, more hackathons than she can count, and she's the founder and CEO of Humanistic Technologies, an organization whose mission is to provide technological tools to support workers in the helping professions. Ruby, I just don't meet that many people who have expertise in social work and combine it with expertise in technology. Would you tell me the story behind that, please?
Let's see, where do I start? Basically, I'm kind of lucky in the sense that I had dual careers at the same time. When I was getting, I was in school to become a social worker, Casting Long Beach. Got my bachelor's and my master's in social work. At the same time, I was in the United States Air Force. So at the United States Air Force, I worked on the flight line with C-141 cargo planes. My job was to work with the crew chiefs and mechanics to figure out why the planes were not flying. And so we had this very long table, all the TCTO manuals of what literally makes up the plane, bit by bit, part by part. So I would get these diagnostics from the mechanics, and so I would try to figure out what made the plane not fly. And trying to understand, what do I need to do to order this particular part, or understand, is there another parts to it? And then get back with the crew chiefs and figure out, okay, what do we need to do?
But an experience that's all too familiar would propel Ruby to take a closer look at technology.
And then one day, I took my car to a mechanic, and I got ripped off. The mechanic charged me like $800 for a brake job. And I'm like, yeah, it was heartbreaking. I'm like, wait a minute, I've been victimized, and I don't like it. And so I took matters in my own hands and found out there was an opening at a combat squadron for mechanic. But I didn't have the skill set, so I signed up, and they took me to mechanic school. United States Air Force paid for my training. So close to 5 months, I went to mechanic school and I learned how to fix cars. Electrical systems, the AC systems, everything. So, and every car had their own manual. So it doesn't matter what car, they had its own manual. So if a car broke down, I'd grab the manual, read the manual, just like I would with the airplanes, look at what I need to do, and take a wrench and fix it. Meanwhile, I'm still studying to be a social worker. So I'm doing now case management. I'm helping the homeless, working domestic violence shelters, and, you know, working for foster kids, advocacy rights, voting rights, you know, anything that has to do with empowerment and advocacy. And then at the same time, I'm fixing cars. I have a toolbox. I'm looking at electrical systems. I'm reading flowcharts, data diagrams, and the whole nine yards.
And soon, she was looking for the next challenge. And
then after that, I said, well, you know, I've learned enough about mechanics and cars. I want to do something else. There was an opening in March Air Force Base to be a videographer. So basically, as a videographer, they have computer base where you would take all the information and you would transfer the analog to digital. I would do the edits for pictures and video voiceovers, and it was all digital. But I had to learn the computer system in order to do all this work. So then I got sent to another training camp, boot camp for the military. It was a joint force task force with all five branches put together. And so we learned to work as a team with all the different branches. So I was there for almost 5 months learning how to use computer systems and do editing equipment, the whole nine yards. So my love of technology then transferred from the actual physical mechanical process to actual computers. And so I'm like, this is really, really cool.
And working in these two very different fields would ultimately sow the seeds for combining them.
at the same time, as a social worker, my first job working for the county, we still had typewriters. We still had whiteout. We still had carbon paper. In the military, though, they changed from paper to digital so quick and so fast. It was amazing to see the whole military transfer so fast. But yeah, I would go to work and had a typewriter. And so I was literally in both worlds, typewriters, carbon paper with this fancy stuff at the military, right? All the stuff that they were using, like, wow, I was blown away. So as I was working with the advocacy process of social work, I had a glimpse of technology through the military. And I was able to understand how powerful and profound technology is as a tool. So I decided to go back to school. And after I got my master's in social work, I went back to school to get a degree in computer information systems. So now I have this skill set. I have my left brain, my right brain working at the same time. And so whenever there's a process where I want to empower someone or a group or an entity, community, I look at how can we use technology to create the profound push to make that change happen.
And how do you answer that question? What are some of the ways? You put this wonderful question rhetorically to Toolbox LA, how can technology be a game changer for social problems? What are some of the ways you answer that?
Well, you know, if you look from any social work, helping profession, anything that has to do with advocacy, from the federal, state, county, municipal process, in order to create change, you need an organization to do so. And that organization, again, can be from federal down to the local municipal, and they all need numbers. If you don't have numbers, you can't justify your service, you can't justify your program, you can't justify your organization if you have no numbers. Well, guess what? Computers are really, really good at collaborating with other systems and pulling that information in such a way you get numbers, you get statistics, you get outcomes. And so I understand how these agencies are really, really critical to providing service to the public, but they don't have a really strong foundation of data. So what I do is I look at agencies, and I've worked and I collaborate with many agencies on how to strengthen their database systems or how to use mobile technology or how could they change their user interface or even their content to get a much more deeper, profound process that's more engaging for the public, more engaging for the client that needs them, but also the fact that I'll show you how to generate numbers, generate statistics.
The roots of Ruby's passion for child safety and advocacy run deep. Why social work? Why did you first fall in love with social work and determine that that was what you really wanted to do in life?
I'm a former foster kid from LA County, and oh my God, there's so many stories of being foster and experiencing that for myself and also seeing other foster kids, period. And so, you know, being a victim to abuse, being victim actually to a system, because when you're taking into foster care, you then can also become a victim to the system because your needs are not met. And what does that look like from a client trying to receive services and not knowing how to negotiate that? Because there's a lot of systems, a lot of pages, a lot of things. And if you don't have the expertise of the agent or the agency, then you are going to be struggling for a while trying to figure things out.
And she says cutting through the maze is only a part of the challenge.
Also, some of these agencies are only open Monday through Friday. And I realize when you're in crisis and it's after 5, you're by yourself and you're trying to figure this out and you have no resources. So, you know, understanding the dynamics of a person in crisis, first of all, it was a really painful experience. And so instead of being angry and having this painful experience define who I am, I use this painful experience, turn it on its head, and use it to empower myself, my learning, my passion, my purpose to create change through how do I take my pain and my experience and then use technology to be the vehicle of change.
What helps you in a system like that when it's painful and it's impersonal and people tell you things that a lot of other people's spirits will be crushed? What's the catalyst to make you go, no, I'm going to fight back?
You know what? I don't necessarily say no, I'm going to fight back per se. You know what? I hear more no's than I hear yeses. And I kind of chuckle because there's, I like the word impossible. Like, for instance, because when you hear no, it's impossible. I say, I listen to them, I listen to the rhetoric, and then my usual response to them, or even just my thinking is, it's impossible for you, but if I take the same word, it's possible for me, because I'm possible, right? It's the same word, you just put a space between the M and the P, and that creates a completely different dynamic. And when I hear the word no, basically that tells me, you know what, they haven't figured it out. It's my job to figure it out. And so instead of getting angry, I just take it as a challenge. I'm like, okay, they said no. They haven't figured it out yet. I'm going to take it upon myself to see how can I figure this out through alternative means. Is it through technology, through my friends at the government level? Is it people that I know at the nonprofit level? What do I need to do to figure this out? All it is a puzzle. I haven't found the right pieces. And then I go on this venture looking for the pieces to put it together.
What's one of your absolute favorite stories about the way you yourself did that as a technological professional?
I laugh because I have a lot of them.
Maybe it's not fair to ask for one, but I'll ask you to choose one for starters.
Oh, my God. You know what? I had this one administrator, and I'm going to give names because I'm not going to. But I was told that there was a particular process related to child abuse that couldn't be done, or not couldn't be done, but they were meeting all the time on an ongoing basis. But in my opinion, it wasn't moving fast enough. It wasn't happening for these kids. And it was regarding child sex trafficking. And I was picking up these kids, and I actually had them in my car. And so one of my job is to assess them. So I ask them all sorts of questions, and they tell me the horrors of being tossed around like a piece of meat through all these Johns. And it was really, really profound to hear these kids in their own ways tell me how victimized they were over and over again. And then I was like, wow. And then to have these kids in my car on a repeated basis. So I wasn't okay with that. And I was trying to encourage certain people to move forward. And so what happened was I wanted to volunteer. So look, I understand how certain data streams are not working together that's keeping us to respond appropriately, effectively, and efficiently. I know how to fix it. And I was told, no, don't do it, because we already have too many people on the team. We have too many people involved. And I'm thinking to myself, you guys have been meeting this for over 5 years, and I still don't say anything. I'm not going to question the authority figures in LA County.
So instead, Ruby used technology plus inspiration to turn that no on its head.
I'm an avid reader, and I love Peter Drucker. He's a world economist. I read his stuff. And he said, if you want to create change, sometimes you need to create a better widget. You need to create competition. That really creates the process where you can make those changes. So I'm like, okay, this person said no. I need to figure it out. Some alternative means. Eric Garcetti, the mayor of LA, had a hackathon. So I said, okay. It's a women challenge hackathon for empowerment of women. So I called a bunch of hacker friends. I said, hey, you want to come hack with me for this Eric Garcetti's hackathon? He goes, yeah, what are you going to do? And so I'm going to create a mobile app for child sex trafficking. So I went to this hackathon with my team of coders, and we, within 24 hours, created a mobile app for child sex trafficking. And then we ended up winning. And so we had on Twitter. It blew up on Twitter. It was on Facebook. It was on social LinkedIn. I mean, I was getting hits from London and Paris and Canada and Africa. It was pretty cool. Well, anyways, all those administrators that were saying it can't be done, well, here's this lowly cubicle worker from the county that figured it out in 24 hours, and you're sitting in for 5 years. So, you know, Peter Drucker said it best. If you want to create change, create the better widget. And so I was able, and we had a running joke when we were hacking with my crew, because we were actually interviewed by another TV reporter. And the running joke was, what the federal government couldn't do in 5 years, we'd do it in 24 hours. So we were saying, hey, we got this widget. And so then the county and some folks found out I had this tool. And I said, I'm going to give it away for free. And that purpose is just to show that it's viable. When you have a process and you firmly believe in its purpose, it's going to come. If you believe in it, you just need to figure out what resources you need to pull it off. And I knew for this particular heartbreak for me was, okay, technology can be key. How do I use technology to empower the child sex traffic victims in our community so that these children thrive? So I created this interface, and then I gave it away. So, yeah, it created change, and the county, the people that I was talking with before that did the hack, they couldn't say, well, we don't have any resources, because clearly I did in 24 hours with a bunch of ragtag hackers at a picnic table. You know? And there was no, where's the funding on that one, right?
This success would lead to other victories.
I did some other projects where the union, SEIU, had 97,000 members, and they have databases, and they were trying to figure out how do we empower the membership, right? And so I literally got pulled off the line at the county and said, we need her. And I helped the union reestablish this unified database So now with a click of a button, they could literally call upon 97,000 members at a click of a mouse to do their processes. And we actually had a strike in the county, and everybody was summoned to the strike, and we end up winning all the things that we asked for at the county level. So
what if somebody listening wants to know more about this interface or about some of the apps you've developed? How do they find out about those?
Well, they could just contact me on Facebook and LinkedIn. And the reason why I use the social media channels, because I'm always posting something. If I'm going to a hackathon, I post. I'm going to this hackathon. If I'm going to be speaking, I'm going to this event. If there's an event that I'm pushing and information sharing, I'm very transparent. LinkedIn, I'm much more professional in terms of what I post and how I say things, whatnot. And Facebook, I'm more playful. I get more gritty, so to speak. You know, I get more playful. My language is a little bit different. But I post all my antics on Facebook.
Okay, to give that Facebook page where people can connect with you?
Yeah, it's Ruby Gillen, and my first name, last name spelled, and then Facebook. And you'll see my screen has data, has a big old, my image is mine, of course it's data, and there's all the little buttons on it. But yeah, Facebook and LinkedIn, my first name, last name. I get a lot of messages, private, instant messages through Facebook and LinkedIn, because that's how I communicate. I use that because I've had a lot of circles. I have my social work circle, I have my political circle, I have my hacker circle, I have my Latino coder circle, and through one post, I tell everybody what I'm doing.
Now, you're the technology expert, but a lot of people are intimidated by hackathons. What if somebody listening would love to get involved, but they don't have a background in coding? They don't have a background in technology as you have. Is there some way they could?
Actually, yeah. I've posted many resources on my Facebook account in the sense that you don't have to be a coder if you believe in a cause. How to use a hackathon, how to use technology to empower your cause. And you could actually come in as a subject matter expert. If you get a bunch of hackers that believe in your cause, let them know how you see it and how you relate to it. Talk from a point of view, from a story. Bring clients into the story. And then through the process of having the story, the hackers will understand what you're trying to do. And then sit with them, collaborate with them, and then have them create these flow charts. You don't need a computer. All you can do is a piece of paper, start doing some diagrams, and see, okay, if this person's receiving services, what is this person actually receiving? What do you want this person to receive in terms of information? Okay, from an agency perspective, what kind of data do you want to obtain? What does that data look like? If you want to receive this data, okay, what's a nomenclature? I mean, those are things that you can actually have a dialogue with without the necessary vehicle learning how to code. You don't need a code for that.
And Ruby says that's exactly how she encourages her colleagues to use technology.
I have a lot of social workers in my network, and I'm getting them to understand hackathons and say, if you want an app, if you want to try something new, go to a hackathon, come and join me, just for your experience, and you'll see how you can create tech tools without having a computer. Good piece of paper, a good marker, pencils, you could create some really good stuff on paper. Give it to a coder, get them to understand the story, and they'll create something.
That's an exciting challenge.
Yeah.
Where does Humanistic Technologies, your company, come in with this one? How did you come to start it, and when?
Oh, my God. I had many reiterations of my company. It's always focused on empowerment and advocacy for children. Because I see how everything's so cumbersome, and the human health service industry, they're not up to par with today's technology, so my goal is to utilize technology through my company to be the advocate for technology for the helping profession. Because there's not that many social workers or people in the helping profession that really thrive on technology. They don't have that understanding. So you have this room where you got, you know, technologists that speak Russian, so to speak, right? And then you have social workers that speak Spanish, and they're in the same room together, but they just don't understand each other. So my companies could be the liaison between both worlds. So we let people know that we are the advocates for tech, advocates for the people that are in crisis. And so we get asked to do things. And so that's where things started, is actually from the point of view of social work, but bringing technology in the forefront.
How can anyone listening best support you? What do you need?
I just want people to understand and to know that technology is key. It's an incredible, profound tool that can do so much and so quickly. People have no idea how profound. Oh my God, it's just amazing. And so what I would like to do is continue building this network of anybody that's interested in tech and that's a human health service worker or first responder, and let them know that I'm here to help them understand, and I'm willing to help them bridge the connections from what they're trying to do with technologists. I have really good friends that are technologists or science majors that are artificial intelligence geeks that are robotics. I have a roster of all these people that I know. And so if there's people that are interested, by all means, just give me a, connect me to, you know, your organization and I'll help you out.
Currently, Ruby's own organization, Humanistic Technologies, is using tech to assist a number of workers in the helping professions.
Right now, we're working with Dr. Michael Durfee and ICANN to help them build their software to reduce fatal child abuse from a injury perspective, from the hospital's perspective.
ICANN is Los Angeles County's Interagency Council on Child Abuse and Neglect.
So we're working on that. We already have a prototype completed. We're working on contracts between entities. And there's another one we're working on that we already completed a model for. It works. And so we did a pitch with Manos, and which is affiliated with Google. We got accepted. So we're going up to Silicon Valley in end of July for a week to work with Manos, and we'll be spending 2 days at Google.
Now, Manos Accelerator is the first organization for Latin American entrepreneurs and technology startups, which Google began partnering in 2013.
How cool is that?
It's cool. I was kind of invited to the White House, so that was fun.
The first White House hackathon?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was awesome.
Please take me there in your imagination and tell me one of your favorite stories.
Oh my God. Honestly, my favorite story is my mother, and I'll tell you why. My mother's from Mexico, right? From a small little Pueblo town, you know, dirt roads, the whole nine yards. So I'm at home, and I get this email, and it's from the federal government, the White House. And I'm thinking, this is spam, you know, this is from someone from Nigeria that's trying to give me a $5 million, right? I'm like, this is so hokey, like whatever, right? And so I did, you know, I did some further digging into the email string because I could do that and find out, oh my God, it is the federal government. So I'm like, So I clicked through and did everything they asked me to do because, of course, you know, they want to know who I am for security clearances. And then I got a window that says, we'll get back with you shortly. I didn't tell anybody. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, what is this? And then I finally got an email that says, congratulations, you're going to the White House, blah, blah, blah. So I'm so excited. I'm like a kid in a candy store, right? I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to the White House. I'm all excited. So the first thing I do is I grab my phone and I call my mom, right? My mom could hear the excitement in my voice. You know, I'm like all over myself. And I said to my mother in Spanish, mom, I'm going to the White House. I'm going to the White House. My mother, without missing a beat, says, whose White House are you going to? And I said, Mom, Obama's house. So who? Obama. I goes, and they shouldn't believe me. It was this classic. Just the mom was so like, huh? Who's White House? She thought it was like a neighbor down the street. You know, and nothing was real. And I didn't tell anybody. I was very, very quiet until I bought my airplane ticket and I got everything squared away. You know, and it was, and then when the day before I left, then I posted on Facebook, I'm going to the White House. It was an amazing experience. I got to, and then I mean, you know, for me, I mean, I'm like, this is really cool. I got to meet some really incredibly amazing, talented, brilliant people from the United States. I got to meet it's amazing. It was just an experience I'll never forget. But it led me believe that, okay, this is just one stepping stone. I was called to be here, and I'm going to take it a step further and see how far I could push innovative technology in the forefront using the catalyst of the person in crisis as my thrust. So the White House challenged me to think beyond that, and so I became more active with the American Public Health Association, and this is really cool. This is amazing. American Public Health is the oldest and largest profession in the world. Last symposium, we had over 10,000 people show up, and over 140 countries participate in APHA. And Dr. Diana Adams is the founder and the creator of the tech section for the entire APHA global process, right? Well, I met her through Dr. Michael Durfee, right? And she saw me, she goes, you know what, you're really smart. I want you to come for the tech section. You know, I know you love tech. She goes, all right. And she said, I want to be your mentor. I want to help you and groom you what APHA is and how we work and all the nine yards. So I'm okay. So I was being mentored by her, and I eventually became the chair members for APHA. So I interact with all the members around the world. 2 weeks ago, I read 39 abstracts, how technology is being used from all these different subject matter experts. And then my mentor says, guess what? Just like 6 months ago, she got accepted by the United Nations to represent the U.S. So I'm like, really, really cool. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. You know, you're this woman and you're my mentor. And then you yourself are becoming an incredible being. And then yesterday she sends me a text really on my phone. And she said, the United Nations Council voted. And now I'm a board member of the United Nations.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so my mentor is literally an executive board member of the UN.
So am I speaking to a future UN board member, perhaps?
You know what? I don't know. She is an amazing woman. I learned a lot from her. And I even set up the Slack channel for different organizations just to get them more organized and center their work around tech. And so she's taught me a lot, and I learned a lot. And so, you know, I'm doing that and doing some other work with other associations. But because of APHA, and because it's so incredibly large and profound, my learning curve went up. I mean, it was incredible. So now I'm applying that learning to other associations.
Ruby talked about one of the most rewarding aspects of her unique combination of career fields.
Now, from the point of view of creating the next mobile app for Facebook or finding the next restaurant, because you already have all those apps. My purpose in life is to show people, look, technology is here. How can we leverage our efforts in such a way that we change? And technology is my catalyst of change.
Now, after you've gone to the White House, after you've got a mentor who's on the board of the United Nations, after you go to San Jose with all this incredible stuff, what's next? What would you really love to be doing in the future with the coolest technology you can think of?
You know what? Bottom line, if I could save a life, that's incredible, right? It's not about tech. I mean, yes, and tech's my vehicle, but it's about, okay, if I could create an app that saves children, that reduces fatal child abuse, that reduces domestic violence, my day is done. I'm good. Because it's not about the tech or the money. It's, at the end of the day, what matters the most. It's people. It's our connections, our relationship to one another. That's profound, not what's in your pocket.
Adding to that, the fact that people are what matter, what else would you really love people to get from you if they could only get one thing from your work about innovation, creativity, and making a difference?
Technology is a tool that can create profound change. And I just want people to open up and embrace it.
Ruby, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
You and I have been listening to Ruby Gillen, fatal and severe child abuse and family violence technologist, researcher, and data analyst at ICANN Associates. Ruby is also the founder and CEO of Humanistic Technologies, an organization whose mission is creating technology to empower workers in the helping professions. You'll find more information on their website, humanistictechnologies.com. That's humanistictechnologies.com. And as Ruby says, if you'd like to know more about all the cool stuff she's creating as a hacktivist for social good, you can contact her through Facebook or LinkedIn. Look for Ruby Gillen, which is spelled G-U-I-L-L-E-N. That's Facebook or LinkedIn, and look for Ruby Gillen, G as in George, U-I-L-L-E-N. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to Over Coffee through our website, twomavericks.com. That's two, T-W-O, Mavericks, M-A-V-E-R-I-X, twomavericks.com. And you can contact us at twomavericks@gmail.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.